Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. My name is Jeff. On today's broadcast, host Jamie Jackson will be interviewing three people about the Millions for Prisoners Human Rights March on Washington. There will be no calendar of events this week, but do stay tuned for the 420 drug war news at the end of the broadcast. Now, here is Jamie to tell you about her guest.
Good morning. Welcome to Jaws of Justice. My name is Jamie Jackson. Today, we are going to be talking to activists in the I Am We Prison Advocacy Network, a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting prisoners' human rights. I Am We is committed to educating the public on the effects of racism and classism that have led to the imprisonment of a disproportionate number of blacks, Latinos, Native Americans, and poor whites. The I Am We Prison Advocacy Network also advocates for politicized and political prisoners and for the ending of mass incarceration. This morning, we will be focusing on the August 19th March on Washington, D.C., in support of prisoners' human rights. The Millions for Prisoners' Human Rights March was originally conceived from inside the prisons by several currently incarcerated persons. Now, activists in the I Am We Prison Advocacy Network are making this historic march a reality. We will speak with Max Parthas, an internationally recognized spoken word artist and host of the New Abolitionist radio program. Max will talk about his work over the years to abolish the provision in the 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution that allows for compulsory prison labor. Then we will hear from Crystal Roundtree, a human rights activist and community organizer out of Raleigh, North Carolina. Crystal is the lead organizer for the August 19 March and rally in Washington, D.C. Then, in our third interview, local IWW activist Brianna Perrell will talk about the IWW's work with the prisoners' strike that is timed to coincide with the march, and efforts here in Kansas City to get people to the march. Now let's hear from Max Parthas. Max is an internationally recognized spoken word artist. Just this month, he received the Will Bell Humanitarian Award at the 5th Annual Spoken Word Gala in Columbia, South Carolina, and he has been ranked as one of the top 10 spoken word artists worldwide. Max and his wife, Tribal Rain, have appeared in several hundred venues and cities all across the country, from neighborhoods to Hollywood, poeticizing sometimes for gangsters and sometimes for governors, in schools, churches, clubs, parks, and prisons. Together, Max Parthas and Tribal Rain have been positively changing minds and touching the lives of people across all levels of society with their inspirational work. Max is also a devoted abolitionist. He is committed to making the public aware that slavery continues to legally exist inside America's prisons. He is the creator and host of the online radio program New Abolitionist Radio, which can be heard live every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Central Daylight Time. Max, welcome to KKFI and Jaws of Justice.
Thank you very much, Jamie. It's great to be here, of course. And just a little update. I'm not necessarily the creator of New Abolitionist Radio. I'm a co-creator, I guess would be better to say it, along with Scotty Reed, the founder of the Black Talk Radio Network.
Okay, good to know that. So let's start. I wonder if you could begin by talking to our audience about the 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution, the amendment that seemingly abolished slavery in the United States after the Civil War. What was the clause in the 13th Amendment that allowed slavery to legally continue even until today?
Well, the clause is basically in the middle of this 47 words where it says, except for prisoners duly convicted. And using that exception clause, in 1865 an immediate transition from the individual being able to own people to the state now owning them as state property inside prisons made the change that we see today. So, for instance, here in South Carolina, where I'm at, the first state prison was built or opened in 1866, exactly 1 year after the Emancipation Proclamation, and it was immediately filled with black bodies who were being arrested under the black code laws, for instance, where you could get arrested for doing the most menial thing or simply not having a dollar in your pocket when approached by authorities, or even things like just looking a white woman in the eyes could get you arrested. And then you would go into these prisons who in turn would lease you out to the different corporations like the railroad companies, the mining companies, back to the plantations. Some people spent their entire lives underground working in mines. And that continued all the way up to 1928 in Alabama, where a cave-in occurred in 1928, killing 145 black men, women, and children who were in there for things as simple as loitering. And it changed public opinion, and they stopped at that time. But a version of it also continued here in South Carolina all the way up to the 1960s. So what we see today with prison labor being used for commercial goods and services is an extension of what was at one time called convict leasing.
Okay. And so what do you think, that's all interesting, what do you think is the public misunderstanding today about the 13th Amendment?
The public, I guess you could divide it into two groups at this time, being the people, not the politicians, but the people. And the people are very much aware of modern-day slavery and human trafficking. They don't have a problem understanding it. But our major political parties are in complete denial. They do have a problem understanding what is going on. And it's not so much of not understanding the 13th Amendment as understanding the results of the 13th Amendment. People get confused when they hear the word slavery. They expect to see people in chains who are owned by some white guy in the South and working in fields,
right?
You know, doing cotton and things like that. But there's a big difference between slavery today and slavery of the antebellum period. In the antebellum period, as I expressed, you could own people. But today, you're not born a slave. Nobody's born into the ownership of somebody else, but you're born into areas where they hunt people in order to enslave them for a period of time. So you could go to prison for 10 years for something inconsequential, like the way things are going today. Given an example would be the crack cocaine versus powder cocaine laws, where black people who were caught with the same amount of cocaine were doing 100 times more time than those caught with powder cocaine. So you could get caught for something inconsequential and spend 10 years in prison as a slave. And when I say slave, I mean that you're owned by the state. They can trade you to other prisons. They can lease you out to private corporations. They can force you to work in places like AT&T call centers, which are built into prisons, or through Unicor, the corporation, which as of 2012 was worth $1 billion just providing services through prison slave labor. So the difference is you're not born a slave, but you can become one at any moment for any reason.
Okay, that's a good point to take. Now, in just a little bit, we want to talk about the March on Washington that's going to happen in August. But first, I wonder if you can tell me what kind of support you have gotten in your goal to educate the public about the 13th Amendment, and what as opposition has happened that has frustrated you?
I must admit that we have been mowing down opposition. The understanding of what's happening now with modern-day slavery is spreading like wildfire. An example would be this interview right now. Okay. Just a few years ago, an interview like this would not even existed, say, in 2012. So people are catching on very, very, very quickly. The opposition that we're running across seems to be coming directly from the for-profit private prisons, as well as many of the people whose livelihoods depend on the existence of prisons. They don't want to lose their jobs. An example would be Colorado. Colorado is a prison state. It has some of the most advanced maximum security prisons in the country, as well as prisons scattered throughout the whole state. Some of the towns are completely dependent on the existence of those prisons. So for people whose very livelihood and entire cities or towns that are threatened by the loss of prisons, they tend to fight back against that. Just as they did in the 1800s when people's livelihoods were dependent on slavery. They did not want to lose that which they had built.
Right. It's the money factor. Sure.
Right.
So let's talk about the march for a little bit. Just to let our listeners know, on August 19th this summer, there will be a march on Washington, D.C. called the Millions for Prisoners Human Rights March. And of course, standing up for the rights of prisoners is a multifaceted task, as you know, Mac. But if you had to identify the primary goal of the march this August, what would that be?
To end slavery. That's the primary goal. That's not going to happen immediately, and we know that. And so what we have are two primary agendas that we're trying to achieve, two primary goals. That first one is, of course, is to get the understanding or the recognition that this is slavery, that people need to come to that conclusion, that this is not mass incarceration, this is slavery. And they're hunting people and then putting them to work for free and housing their bodies at the cost of the taxpayers, something that is just for the housing aspect alone is worth roughly around $200 billion a year that comes directly from the taxpayers. The second goal that we have is to demand congressional hearings on the effects of the 13th Amendment over the last century and a half. We believe that if the world and the nation gets to see what we already know exists, they won't stand for it. A lot of these deeds are being hidden behind closed doors. Media is preventing people from speaking about them openly on mainstream media. But we believe if we can show people this through a discovery process in congressional hearings, that they will stand up and be counted and refuse to allow this to go on any further.
So let's talk about your radio program, the New Abolitionist Radio Program. Can you tell us how that got started and how do you see that tying into the march? And what is the mission of the New Abolitionist Radio Program?
The mission of the New Abolitionist Radio Program is to open people's minds about the circumstances of modern-day slavery, to provide current information so they can see along with us through our reporting, the events that are happening right now, not from the 1800s, but right now in regards to modern-day slavery. And also we provide historical references by some of our segments, like the Abolitionist in Profile, where we profile a past abolitionist and sometimes present abolitionist. We also have another segment called Riders of the 21st Century Underground Railroad, where we profile organizations and people like the Innocence Project, who are continually getting people freed from prisons who were innocent all along after 10, 20, 30, sometimes even 40 years of serving time. So our goal is to be a propaganda arm, and I say that in a term of, as you know, influencing people toward the abolitionist movement. And in that manner, we have been very successful. When we began New Abolitionist Radio in 2012, Scotty Reed, as I said, the founder of Black Talk Radio Network, approached me because he had heard about my work in abolition already and said, Max, would you like to do a program with me called New Abolitionist Radio where we can get this out on the air and get more people to know what's going on? And since then, we have seen changes not only in the United States, but across the world. One of the things that we'll take credit for, and I don't mind taking credit for it at all, just last year, in August of 2016, President Barack Obama announced that they would be phasing out their use of private prisons. This came after much lobbying and a lot of getting the word out about modern-day slavery to the point where they had to react. They had to do something. And then when they examined it, they couldn't excuse it or justify it, so they had to do something. And so he said that they would be phasing out private prisons over the course of the next few years. Unfortunately, that didn't occur. But when he said it, the prisons companies like CCA, now known as CoreCivic, and GEO Group, the top prisons in the nation, their stocks took a nosedive to the point where Wall Street had to stop trading on that day, or those prison companies would have tanked in one single day. We almost killed them in one single day. As I said, unfortunately, that did not occur with the Trump administration coming in. Instead of phasing out private prisons, they embraced them. They started throwing, like they're doing right now, hundreds of millions of dollars, tripling the number of immigration police, adding more police generally, and just throwing money at the criminal justice system.
Right. It's been a real setback, I know.
Their stocks almost tanked in a single day, but with the Trump administration, their stocks rose by as much as 140%.
I'd like for you to say something about your work as a spoken word artist and how that's tied in to your work with abolition.
I've been a poet all my life, and I've always had a gift with words and with writing. I really got involved in the spoken word community in the mid-90s, and we helped to make a number of changes, a number of cultural advancements. Like you see today, they have a lot of these spoken word poetries that you can go to online or on the radio where people go and feature just as if they were in a real place. We were originally... We were among the original people to start that. Okay. If you're familiar with the company called Blog Talk Radio, well, that started back in 2004, I believe, and it was based on the model that we were doing on conference calls, where we would get poets together on a conference call and put together like an open mic slash feature. And they adopted that. And I was actually on their first program. And now that's a global organization, Blog Talk Radio, with many thousands of radio shows on it.
Right.
So after participating in things like that and helping to advance spoken word industry as a whole, once I got my hands on criminal justice reform, abolitionism, and things like that, I said, you know what? We can use our talents and our arts to make a difference here in the same way that we did with our own industry. And we've been working towards that goal ever since.
Okay,
so
great.
Just about everything that my wife and I do leans towards bringing awareness towards modern-day slavery and human trafficking with our art and our poetry.
Okay. Well, now we're going to be speaking with Crystal Rountree in just a minute, and she's going to be talking more about the march. But I'd like to ask you if there's one thing that you would like to share with the audience about where they can find more information about the I Am We Prison Advocacy Network.
Well, that's very simple. You can go to I Am We Ubuntu, UBUNTU.com, and they have all the information available at a single website right there. Or you can just Google the words Millions for Prisoners March on Washington, and you'll find a variety of information on it.
Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you very much, Jimmy, and shout out to all of the people that made this happen today.
You're listening to the Jaws of Justice radio show, and our guest is Crystal Rountree. I'm Jamie, and the subject is the Millions for Prisoners Human Rights March. Good morning, Crystal.
Good morning.
Can you begin by telling me about the I Am We Prison Advocacy Network? When and how did you get start working with that network?
Absolutely. I consider myself to be a human rights activist and community organizer. And so I've been involved in different aspects of that within my community over the last several years. And so, as I mentioned, this has always been something near and dear to my heart, the people and what goes on out here in our community and the things that really affect that. I personally was motivated to start the I Am We Prison Advocacy Network because I have several loved ones that are in prison right now, you know, and they're subjected to that type of existence. As I began to gain a deeper understanding about the design of the system and the devastating impact that it has on families, communities, and the country at large, I was compelled to do my part in that. And so the I Am We Prison Advocacy Network, myself along with two other individuals, came up with this idea of the I Am We Prison Advocacy Network. And we are based out of Raleigh, North Carolina. I Am We is based on a African concept called Ubuntu, which basically says that I am because we are, and it speaks to the interconnectedness of people to one another, and that you know, no one is an island, but that our actions affect one another and that we have the responsibility as humans to stand up and support one another. And so we really take that philosophy to heart at I Am We. And that's a little bit about how we got started and what our missions are. But we're definitely a prisoners human rights organization.
Great. Okay. Well, we want to talk about the march in just a minute. But I wonder if you could just elaborate a little bit, since you have personal experience with the devastating effects of the prison system, could you just give us some idea about how that works out?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I volunteer. I do other work outside of working with prisoners directly, but that is something that I do. But I also work with a lot of youth here in our community, and so many of their parents are incarcerated, imprisoned, and you can imagine when you remove a family cornerstone from the home, the impact that it has on the family. Which, you know, it's kind of like a trickle effect. If the family is not stable, if we've got lots of families in a community that are destabilized, then it affects, obviously, the entire community. So that's just one small aspect of the devastating impacts. Of course, there are all of the human rights violations that are so impactful. Of course, we don't have enough time here to get into all the specifics of that. But there are lots of atrocities that take place not only behind the wall, but kind of how the system is designed. You know, certain groups of people, specifically people of color, poor people, are targeted and placed into prisons. And so there is this misconception that, you know, well, if people would just stop committing crimes, then we wouldn't have this issue. But once you begin to peel back the layers and do a little research and investigation, you come to find out that this is actually the design of the system, and it's very profitable. And so I hope that answers your question just a little bit.
It does. And, you know, of course, the march that's going to occur in August is called the Prison Human Rights March, and it's to highlight some of these human rights violations inside the prisons. But give me some idea of how the idea for the march began. I understand it was through the Jailhouse Lawyers Speak, so you could tell us a little bit about that group and how the march idea got started.
Absolutely. Jailhouse Lawyers Speak, you may see it abbreviated sometimes as JLS, but this is a collective nationwide of jailhouse lawyers and prisoners throughout the country. They are dedicated to upholding the dignity of prisoners specifically. They do this through a variety of ways, such as litigating, striking, petitioning the courts, writing campaigns, and organizing for legislative changes. Because, of course, we know that one of the basic functions of prisons is to dehumanize. So Jailhouse Lawyers Speak, they reached out to I Am We Prison Advocacy Network. We were already kind of in correspondence with a lot of prisoners. We do work directly, as I mentioned, with so many of the brothers and sisters behind the wall. But JLS did reach out to the I Am We Prison Advocacy family, because not only did our values and aims align with theirs, but because of the fact that I Am We would make sure that their voices were heard without trying to, you know, change or distort their message from their perspective. It was relayed to me and expressed to me how oftentimes when they had collaborated with some other organizations in the past, there was always this need to kind of distort the prisoner's perspective. And so we've got a real aim to stay true to what they are saying. As of right now, JLS is now the inside component of the I Am We family. And through lots of discussions, you know, we were basically talking about what are some of the primary issues that are affecting our prison system right now. And the 13th Amendment was just something that continually came up. And, of course, it's not a new issue. Prisoners themselves have been highlighting prison slavery for a very long time now. But it's certainly an issue that needs to be addressed. And not only that, it is a unifying factor that most people can definitely agree, like, you know, slavery should not exist in 2017. And so that was the beginning of the planning for the march, the Millions for Prisoners Human Rights March. And that planning and discussion started a little over a year and a half ago.
I want to remind our audience that you are listening to the Jaws of Justice radio show on KKFI, and our guest is Crystal Roundtree. I'm Jamie, and the subject is the Millions for Prisoners Human Rights March. Okay, Crystal, I wonder if you can give us an idea of what planning has gone into the march. It's August 19th on a Saturday this summer. How have you used social media, and what arrangements have you made for transportation and that sort of thing?
Okay. Well, you know, as I mentioned before, the planning has been going on for quite some time now. I will say that this is definitely a grassroots movement comprised of lots and lots of Millions for Prisoners Human Rights volunteers, as well as everyday people. Some of these individuals are a part of large, well-established groups, and others not so. But these have been the real champions behind the planning and organizing for this event. People have been out there on the ground passing out flyers and sharing the message within their network, getting on social media. There's not too much of a tight structure behind what we have asked individuals to do. So people are kind of promoting it however they can in their own way, targeted to the audience that they are trying to reach.
Yeah. The march is highlighted on the I Am We website and also on the Facebook page. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And we'll go over that information for the website at the end of the interview. And I noticed when I went on Twitter, you can have the hashtag #AbolishThe13th. And #EndLegalizedSlavery. So that would be another way for people to get information about the issue here. And I understand that there have been some arrangements for transportation to Washington, D.C. through the bus organized by Rally. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So, of course, the march is Saturday, August the 19th, from 12 noon until 5 p.m. in Washington, D.C. It will take place on the National Mall. We are currently still, the National Committee is still in discussion with the National Park Service about the exact location, but we will finalize the details of that by the end of this month. We will have our last meeting with the National Park Service, and we hope to be able to share that information with the people very soon about the specific location. Rally Bus, as you mentioned, is a bus company that we have partnered with to some degree, and they will be providing transportation to and from the march from select cities. That website is rallybus.net. And currently there are, I'm going to say, maybe 15 or 16 cities listed as of right now. The prices do seem to be fairly reasonable from the feedback that I'm receiving from people. And I think that if you have at least 40 riders leaving from any city, that city can also be added to that website, rallybus.net. I think that it will be helpful in maximizing our efforts to get as many people there on Saturday, August the 19th, as possible.
Right. And I want to give you a chance to let us know anything that you would like us to hear about the march before we close.
Okay. Well, I just want people to know that this is an inside-outside collaboration, as I mentioned, between the prisoners and us here on the outside, activists, advocates, loved ones, families, et cetera, but that the prisoners will be doing something to be in solidarity on August the 19th as well. They do have certain activities planned, such as fasting during the month of August, avoiding spending of money within the prison system, such as on the canteen and JPay, et cetera. It's also suggested that the prisoners engage in political studies, specifically the 13th Amendment and the writings of those such as George Jackson. Other prisoners may decide to express their solidarity in other ways, but again, that's totally up to them. One other area that is of focus for the march is to highlight and commemorate Black August, which August in general is a historical month of resistance for prisoners, and that is the reason why August was selected to have this Millions for Prisoners Human Rights March. Within that, we will be highlighting and commemorating certain political prisoners, as well as prisoners that have been resisting the oppression and inhumane treatments of prisoners for a long time. So we just definitely encourage people to get behind this. We are formulating right now a post-March game plan. We do have 2 points of demand specific to this march. The first point of demand is that the exception clause, which legalizes slavery, be removed from the 13th Amendment of the Constitution. And the second point of demand is a demand for congressional hearings on this issue. As you can imagine, that takes a whole lot of work, a lot of work to actually realize those 2 points of demand. And so we are having deep, deep discussions right now about ways that we can continue this even after the march. So I do encourage people to consider starting the I Am We chapter. This is the work of I Am We that will be ongoing addressing these specific issues. And so I think that's pretty much, you know, all that I wanted to share with the listeners.
Before we leave, could you just tell our listeners how to access your website?
Absolutely. So our website is iamweubuntu.com, and that is spelled iamweubuntu.com. Our email address is millionsforprisonersmarch@gmail.com. And those are probably, we are also, we have a really active group on Facebook, and it's called the Millions for Prisoners March on Washington. That is the Facebook group, and they are very active, and a lot of updates are posted in that Facebook group as well. So those are pretty much the basic ways to get in contact with us.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for sharing all that information with us today, and we'll look forward to the march.
Absolutely. See you on August the 19th.
Okay. Hello, Brianna, and thanks for being on KKFI Jaws of Justice. We would like to hear from you about your work with the prisoners and how you are helping to coordinate the prisoners' strike that will occur on the same day as the Prisoners' Human Rights March. Can you talk about that a little?
Yes. So we've been sending out mass mailers to prisoners all around the country. September 9th of 2016, we really gained a lot of energy with using the approach of unionizing prisoners because, as you know, prisoners often work, and when they don't work, they're like warehoused for profit. So it's a working people's issue that we're really addressing here. So in approaching this with unionizing prisoners, we gained a lot of energy on September 9th. And basically the August 19th thing for 2017 is going to be an extension off of that same organizing effort. So we've been mailing mass mailers to all the people who are already in our network, which directly we probably only work with maybe 4,000 prisoners right about now, but they have their own inside networks, and so on September 9th it spread to, I think the modest estimates were around 40,000 prisoners or so that went on strike, and we're not quite seeing that much energy around it yet this year, but it's really early, and so I'm not too concerned about that. And also something that's going to be different about this time around is there's going to be less of a outside public buildup to it. People on the inside have decided they're really going to like work within their internal network and sort of surprise the system. Like one of the things we saw with September 9th was that we had this huge buildup, and so administrators started clamping down on known organizers before things even really got off the ground. And so this year people are kind of organizing more underground. One exception to that is the state of Texas. Prisoners in at least half a dozen facilities at this point have already written in and made public statements that we've been sharing online, and we'll also send those statements in to other prisoners to help them see what others are saying and just kind of build from there. But Texas, just like in 2016, Texas kind of led the initial round of strikes for that year. It looks like they're going to do the same thing again this year with our help on the outside, helping people on the inside coordinate and get their own messages out to us.
Okay. And give us a little more idea, if you can, about what happened in September, that September strike. What were the successes and how long did it go on? And give us some idea of how that worked out.
The major success was that it happened at all and that it was the biggest prisoner labor strike in the history of the U.S. Just the ability to coordinate so many people in so many different states with such desperate conditions and such limited access to communication, just to be able to do that was a huge success in itself. We did not see a lot of immediate gains for people in prison as a result of that. The retaliation was brutal. Retaliation started even before September 9th. So we didn't see a lot of, you know, successes that we can point to where they won some gains. But the huge gain was that so many people participated in it and have built this network. A lot of people had not even heard about our organizing efforts until September 9th came up. And the prisoners started seeing it on TVs and started seeing it in the media they were exposed to. Mainstream media, getting that mainstream media attention was really important.
Right.
Could see it, and then they started reaching back out to us and saying, okay, what's the next step? How do we get involved for now?
Have the prisoners been able to say one or two goals that they are asking for from the prison officials from this strike?
The Millions for Prisoners group slash march, they have a specific list of goals, which you can find on their website. And hopefully you can look that up without me having to say a lot more about it, because I don't have it right off the top of my head. And also, if you email us at iwoc@gmail.com, I'm sorry, iwoc@iww.org, we can get you all that information in the future. But some of them, like the obvious ones, like end prison slavery, stop torturing people, provide food that's fit for human consumption. You may have seen recently there's a lawsuit in one state where they are serving people food that says not for human use. That's pretty common throughout the entire prison system. Others include, like in Texas, they want some changes to the habeas corpus laws, which is one that's pretty unique. So the overall view is that the Millions for Prisoners have a list of demands that is a formal list for that group, and any other prisoners are totally welcome to adopt that list of demands, or the prisoners can make their own, because this should be something that each group of prisoners like owns and can make their own.
Okay. And I do know I'll just add that there are some efforts in Kansas City to help people get to Washington, D.C. on the 19th. I've been working with the Mothers for Incarcerated Sons and Daughters, and they're planning on helping determine transportation for 10 or 15 people from their group. Okay. Is there anything else you would like to add about your work with the prisoners?
Just that it's really, we could really use a lot of help with responding to mail from prisoners. Another thing we really need is people to help facilitate the organizers inside being able to coordinate over larger areas. We have a number of really excellent organizers on the inside, and if we could help match them up with individuals on the outside as, like, dedicated, like, partners or whatever, that would be super helpful, because they draft lists of demands and we'll send in petitions and we'll request call-ins and things. And so the number of people who are working on responding to this massive amount of demands is really small. So it would be really good if people want to find ways to plug in, and there are a lot of really easy ways that are kind of definitely low risk. That's one thing about this. All of this is legal. Jones versus North Carolina, it said that the prison administration can prevent union materials from going into the prisons, that union materials are not protected free speech, but it also says that we unions can still keep sending the materials in anyway. So it's sort of a game of cat and mouse, but this is a legal, you know, it's a pretty safe, low-risk way of organizing. So if people want to get involved with something that, like, really affects people's lives and affects the number of people who are being tortured and enslaved in this country, this is a really good way to do it without having to get arrested and beaten in the streets, fighting the police and that sort of thing.
Okay, and if people are interested in joining you in communicating with the prisoners about the upcoming strike or in any other capacity, how would they get a hold of you?
The best way is email, and that's iwoc@iww.org. Again, that's iwoc@iww.org.
Okay, and thank you very much for speaking with us this morning.
Thank you so much, and I look forward to helping coordinate transportation and getting more people involved locally, too. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right, thank you. We want to let you know a little more about how the idea for this march got started. The idea for the Millions for Prisoners Human Rights March that will take place August 19th originally began with the Jailhouse Lawyers Speak, a group of inmates in prisons who contacted people on the outside with the idea for the march. You can find out more about Jailhouse Lawyers Speak on the IAMWE Ubuntu website. That's IAMWEUBUNTU.com. On the left, you will see behind the wall. If you click there, you'll come to a page that talks about Jailhouse Lawyers Speak. You can also go to the Facebook page of Jailhouse Lawyers Speak if you're interested in getting more information. Then let me remind you that the march is August 19th in Washington, D.C., and efforts are being made to arrange bus transportation from Kansas City to Washington, D.C. You can go to the Jaws of Justice radio page on kkfi.org for information on how to sign up for bus transportation.
It's the 420 Drug War News. Please put your ears on. Please hear this. The following astounding report comes to us out of Georgia, courtesy of NBC 11.
Drunk driving arrests are down sharply after decades of aggressive enforcement, while drugged driving arrests are actually climbing. Georgia now has more than 250 officers with special drug recognition expert training, but 11 Alive chief investigator Brendan Keefe discovered some drivers are getting arrested for driving stoned, even when their drug test came back clean.
You hadn't had anything to drink tonight?
Not tonight, no.
Not tonight, okay. One of the things that we do is we ask people to both do this thing, okay?
Caitlin Ebner crossed the line and got pulled over on her way home from work.
Well, real hard. I'm going to ask you to stop. Keep going. You can stop.
No, she wasn't drinking. All tests for alcohol came up empty.
When's the last time you smoked marijuana?
Oh, I don't do that. I can give you a drug test right now.
You don't smoke marijuana?
I do not,
okay.
No.
All right, well, you're showing me indicators that you have been smoking marijuana, okay.
I didn't realize that you could get arrested for something that you didn't do until it happened to me.
Right, watch your wrist for me. I don't want to pinch you.
Are you still for marijuana?
No, ma'am, not possession unless I find it in your car. I believe that you're impaired by the marijuana that you've smoked.
Before you felt those handcuffs closing over your wrist, did you understand just how serious this was?
I didn't understand. As soon as I took that breathalyzer, I thought I was going home.
It's time you're being taken into custody, okay, for DUI drugs.
The waitress spent the night in jail and had her alcohol server's permit revoked because of the DUI arrest. After 4 months, prosecutors dismissed all charges because her blood test came back completely clean.
You had to spend months and thousands of dollars proving your innocence.
I did.
When's the last time you smoked weed?
I don't smoke weed.
You don't smoke weed?
No, not at all.
The same thing happened to this college student 2 weeks earlier on Good Friday.
Well, I believe you have, okay? I need to borrow your arm real quick, okay? I believe that's why you were failing to maintain your lane and driving halfway on the ramp when I was behind you.
Hold on 1 second. Hold on, sir.
Give me just 1 second. Give me just 1 second.
You're arresting me.
That's correct.
I didn't understand. I'm like, why are you arresting me? Like, what did I do? He said DUI of a substance. I'm like, what?
You're arresting me because you think I smoke marijuana?
I believe that you're impaired by cannabis. Yes, ma'am.
Sir, I don't smoke weed. Is there a way you can test me right now?
Princess Umbamara was also jailed and fought the DUI drug charges for half of 2016.
So the blood test comes back. They toss the case.
I remember my lawyer trying to talk about a deal. I was like, what? I'm not taking a deal. I didn't do anything.
Okay, so when I do a drug test, I'll be free to go, correct?
You're going to jail, ma'am, okay? I don't have a magical drug test that I can give you right now.
But he just did the magic drug test that resulted in your arrest.
They're ruining innocent people's lives.
Caitlin Ebner filed an internal affairs complaint against Officer Carroll. Cobb County investigators exonerated the officer and doubted Caitlin's innocence, insisting the marijuana could have already metabolized out of the blood.
They said, yeah, we see this happen all the time. The test results come back wrong.
So the test results were wrong.
Yeah, that's what they said, that the test results were wrong. And also, if I had a urine test, that it would have came back positive for drugs.
But Caitlin got her own urine test the same week as her arrest. The urine test was also negative for marijuana or other drugs.
This training is so powerful that they believe they can detect drugs that a blood test will not detect.
It's extremely surprising. That's my life that they're playing with.
Cobb County Police Department.
Last week, Cobb County's DUI task force was awarded a trophy by Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
1,696 DUI arrests.
And Officer Carroll was given a silver medal for 90 DUI arrests in 2016.
He put dozens of actual convicted drunk drivers behind bars last year. But if he got three people who were innocent behind bars having to defend themselves, how does that balance out for you?
It's something I have to carry for the rest of my life.
Now, commanders wouldn't let Officer Carroll talk with us, but the department stands behind these arrests. And also the department says that the GBI crime lab often returns results as negative even when there is a trace amount of marijuana in the blood. Cobb County Police also say that any officer trained with this special drug recognition expert training is better and more reliable than a scientific blood or urine test.
Again, that's a legitimate news report coming out of Georgia, courtesy NBC 11.
Recant. Tell us what you know. Recant. We can make things go easy on you. Recant. Drugs are nothing but poison. Recant. You know what they'll do to you in prison. Recant. He's not much of a brother if he let this happen to you. Recant.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
Maybe now we should. DeanBeckerDrugTruth.net.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the host and the guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, or its staff and volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show episodes and podcasts on the Jaws of Justice Radio page on Facebook. If you have a show idea or you want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. And you can always listen to us live on the KKFI website at kkfi.org. This is your engineer for Jaws of Justice Radio, Beth Pike. And be sure to tune in Thursday mornings at 6 a.m. when I host the Thirsty Thursday edition of your Morning Buzz. Our outro music is Better Man, and that's from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Khadija and the White Guy at 9 a.m. on Thursdays, and then Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 on Fridays. Up next is Beautician's Blues. That's with Luscious Lynn. And then at noon, it's Arts Magazine with Michael Hogue. You'll want to stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon, and then Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo en Familia, and Compartiendo en Noche.